Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio and UltimateSportsTalk.com. It's Monday Night Football. We're in the mix, along with Nkechi Free, Oscar Lopez. And we got a lot of action to talk about in the NFL this weekend. We got the Cardinals taking down the Niners, the Seahawks rebounding against the Bears, and obviously Green Bay up and ahead at 17-7 tonight on Monday Night Football after two quarters. So welcome once again, Gridiron Blitz, with the lovely Nkechi Free. How are you doing, Nkechi?
Hey, Oscar. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. I see the Cowboys, you know, working it and still with some injuries, but the Eagles actually rebound, so that was surprising.
Well, we knew they were eventually going to come around, but it was a pretty close game, and I think that Chip Kelly, if he can win one more game, then his team might find that rhythm.
Yeah, and it seems to me like there was some, the Pope coming to Philadelphia helped out the situation.
Oh, don't you start that.
I'm just going on hope here, because he would have been literally cremated if they would have lost again. So I guess that was a good thing for him to show up in the city.
I don't know. These are the same people who booed Santa Claus, so, I can't call it.
I'm just stretching it out there. But, yeah, they played pretty well. They didn't do too bad. He rebounded, but there's still a lot of question marks there with talent. I mean, they played a lot better than the week before.
You know what? And it's not because I'm a Cowboys fan. I just think that I'm not buying into the Chip Kelly system yet. And I'm also still not buying Sam Bradford as a starting quarterback. I think that he has talent. I think that he has potential. I think that he is also that dreaded word, game manager. And I just don't think in a system where you're expected to lead that's a place for a manager. Do you understand what I'm saying? The way his Chip Kelly system is set up, it needs someone who is a lot more, I think, aggressive in terms of leading. And you can tell from the little quick dink passes and the little quick 5 yards here, you know, he's not really moving the ball the way you would think that a system with this supposedly speed is supposed to be run. So I don't know if I'm still buying it yet.
Yeah, I agree. I think they had some issues. Darren Sproles actually did pretty well. You know, he was on a roll. And then the Jets they didn't play bad, but with the same token, Sam Bradford did do a pretty decent job. So they get a win. Fitzpatrick, I have no idea, what was going on there, but he just had a horrible day.
No, he was actually playing Ryan Fitzpatrick football. You know, he'll either give you a really good game where he can not lose it for you and allow himself to just, again, make those short passes, keep it simple, or he's going to try to create something which is a little beyond his skill set And then that's when you're going to get the turnovers. I mean, he had three INTs yesterday for two touchdowns. You should never have more interceptions than touchdowns in a game.
Right, exactly. That's why I'm saying it's like it just like they fell off from the week before. This week they just kind of, you know, they fell off that you know, win streak mentality. The Bears, if we look at the Bears right now, I think, you know, this is kind of horrible.
Yeah, the Bears are another one. Like, there are several other teams who are just totally catching me off guard in terms of just how abysmal they're playing right now. And the Bears are definitely one of them. I know that's Eric's team, and I know that we knew that they weren't going to be great. But the fact that they just sent Jared Allen to the Panthers is another example. And in the middle, I mean, we're just 3 weeks into the season. Who makes these kind of trades this early on? So, I mean, that's a perfect example of just how in a disarray this team really and truly is.
Yeah, I mean, to the Seahawks, I mean, they get blanked, not even a 3 point on the board. But unfortunately, they lose, I think, Jermon Bershrod out of the game in the second half, and then with a concussion, and so that didn't help. And, you know,
they
just have some issues now. Forte just, you know, sidelined as well in the fourth quarter. So, and then no Jay Cutler at this point. So it's just kind of a mess there.
But you know what, though, for all of that and the fact that they didn't put any points on the board, they did really well on defense, or there's also something wrong with the Seattle Seahawks, because they only put up 6 points in the first half. And they came back again in the third quarter, you know, with two touchdowns. And, you know, but the Seahawks weren't on their game either. So, you know, I don't even know what's the takeaway from looking at this score. I mean, if you look at it 26-0, you think, oh, well, you know, the Seahawks were totally on their game. But no, the Seahawks weren't playing any better. So, you know, I can't even call this one. What's the takeaway? Is it that the Seahawks offense is still off and hasn't found their rhythm? Or is the Bears defense, you know, outshining and outplaying, and that they maybe be able to keep them in some kind of contention if they were able to find an offense?
Yeah, and that's the problem right now. It's like they're in a division where Minnesota somewhat has improved since from the week before. You got Green Bay tonight, pretty much in the, you know, in the driver's seat, and then the Lions looked pretty horrible yesterday as well. So at this point, I don't know. I think they'll be at the bottom.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt about that. That Green Bay is going to run away with this division, and as much as I like the Vikings and I like, you know, the way Teddy Bridgewater is slowly building that team up, they're still going to have to put their hopes for anything on Adrian Peterson's back, and you know, I don't think that's just enough. Not when you've got Green Bay, who is looking like they're just taking over, and now they're up 24-7 over the Chiefs. And the Chiefs were, so, you know, between Jamaal Charles and that supposed Andy Reid defense, they're getting decimated.
Yeah, and we're looking right now. We are looking at, I think, Green Bay at the top in the NFC, and for sure the Patriots. You know, Erica's got to be like ecstatic right now because the Hey Goodell tour is on, and they're just walking, they're just doing their thing, and they look like unstoppable. I mean, you had Deion Sanders yesterday when I was watching NFL Network stating that you can just place them in the AFC Championship now, and we just need to wait and see who's going to face them.
You know, and I had to stop for a second to think about it. Because I'm looking at all of the AFC teams. There's only one team right now that I honestly think could give the Patriots a run for their money. And it's the one team that Erica doesn't want to hear. But I'm
You really
I'm
seriously
not
think
gonna
the Jets are going to be there?
Nope, not the Jets.
Okay, well,
Nope, the Buffalo Bills.
that's her hated passion,
No,
but I mean,
no, it's the
that's her hated passion.
Bills
The only
because
other
you hate.
team, I mean,
No, it's
to
the
work
Bills
with
because
right
you
now,
hate
I
Rex
mean,
Ryan.
as we speak, even Denver doesn't look that consistent, even though they're 3-0. Like you said, they're not dominant.
Nope, it's the Bills.
You really
And
think
I
Rex
know I say
Ryan's
that
going to?
because, you know what? I just don't count them out yet. I see, the thing about it is that Tyrod Taylor, for so many people, was an unknown. I had the opportunity to interview him many years ago, right after he first got drafted to the Baltimore Ravens. I was down there for this big thing they call the Hampton Roads Youth Foundation, and all of the big athletes who are from that area come back for this camp. And so I had the opportunity to sit down and talk with Tyrod Taylor. And, I mean, really good kid. Had his head on his shoulders. And what he had that a lot of young quarterbacks don't have coming into this league was patience. He said, I'm just going to go, you know, to Baltimore, and I'm just going to get there and just take in and learn everything that I can get, and I'm going to be behind Flacco and, you know, whenever the opportunity, and just be ready to go whenever the opportunity presents itself for me to shine. And in every single preseason game that he played in when he was there, the Ravens knew that they had something special because you could just see him lighting it up. There was one play I remember that had Ray Lewis literally just screaming and running down the sideline with Tyrod Taylor. And he kept talking about how amazing this young man was, but nobody was paying him any attention. And now the world is finally going to see. So I just think that he's going to be just that little unknown because he wasn't getting all the attention all this time.
I agree. And them bouncing back, especially from the loss that they had against New England at this point,
mm-hmm.
them bouncing back, I mean, this was kind of a statement game, as you're pointing out right now, because I think he threw over for over 250-something yards and 3 scores. So, you know, for a road win and to kind of rout Miami, which Miami coming in here wasn't too bad, you know, in the first 2 weeks. Now they basically got exploited here. And then, you know, you're looking at the Bills now owning Miami over the last 4 years. I think they're 5-2 over the last, 4 years against them. So, you got to give credit, I guess, to Rex Ryan, if you really want to say that, because it's somehow working in Buffalo, where in New York it wasn't working. So it could be, like to your point, it could be Tyrod Taylor.
Well, and then looking at his, looking at what he's done in the first game against the Colts, no interceptions. Against the Patriots, he threw 3 interceptions, but he also had 3 touchdowns. He also he had a passer rating of 93.3, and he had 242 yards. So even in the loss against the Patriots, he still put up 242 yards against them. And, you know, and in all three games so far, his completion rating is over 70%. Ryan Fitzpatrick
yeah,
has been in the league
and the
now.
Good,
how
the
long?
Good thing here is, the good thing here is I think Rex Ryan's got a good formula here. We got a balanced attack with some passing and rushing, and then you got the receiving core kind of evenly being thrown the ball. I think yesterday, Clay and Harvin combined, I think, was, you know, like 12 receptions, and they were averaging at least over 10 yards on a catch. So, I mean, they've kind of balanced it. So, you know, and he throws 3 TDs yesterday, and he's like, I think he was 21 of 29, which is excellent.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing that Rex never had when he was in New York, in addition to not having a competent quarterback, he never had an effective run game. So he had amazing wide receivers with a subpar quarterback and no run game to help take some of the pressure off. And even again with that, Sanchez did okay. I mean, he took them to the AFC Championship, you know, two times back to back. How many rookies do that?
Not
So, I
many,
mean,
and that's why I'm saying it's pretty impressive. To your, as you're pointing out, he's very level-headed. He's focused, and then obviously, if Rex can you know, keep this balanced attack with some run, with the balance running, and then obviously the receiving core being as speedy as they are, you could see, yeah, you could be right. This could be, you know, the challenge to New England.
And again, I'm not going to say that it's definitely going to be, you know, and it probably won't even be possible to do, come out with a Bills versus Patriots championship, because I can't picture how the draw would go at this point, you know, in terms of seeding. But I definitely think it's a possibility. The other thing is that even though Big Ben went out, I'm not counting Michael Vick out just yet, and I'm certainly not counting out the Steelers defense either. So I'm still going to put the Steelers in the playoffs, and the quiet little Bengals are just chugging along as well. And, you know, people really underestimated what they were going to do. And no pun intended, poor little Andy Dalton was the redheaded stepchild of the NFL. And, you know, he's putting together a nice little offensive package up there in Cincy.
Yeah, I just don't think they're for real, Nkechi. We've seen this story over and over every year. They look good in the regular season. They put up good numbers.
Yeah.
But when it counts, they choke. And I think in Cincinnati, yeah, until they can prove us differently, I mean, I don't see them really moving on. I mean, they can own the division. That's not a problem, because Cleveland is not near where it needs to be. Pittsburgh now has issues with quarterback. And I know, you know, Vic could be a difference maker and a game changer, sure. But the bottom line is, you know, at this point, I know they're playing good ball. But, you know, to get to a playoff, to be a playoff team, I just don't see them yet. Maybe we'll see them maybe in week 8, week 9, when they, you know, when their record, you know, obviously is more dominating, and they maybe are leading the division a lot more closely. But you think Cincy to challenge New England? I just don't see it yet.
Well, no, definitely can't. Well, I definitely don't see them to challenge New England, but I definitely think that they'll do well. I think they'll do well in the playoffs. I think they'll get out of the first round. I think that they can get out of the first round. Because
now,
Baltimore,
on the same subject that we're talking right now, on the Rex wagon that we're in, he gives up Matt Castle to Dallas. And obviously,
yeah,
that's, I guess he's very confident with Taylor, because to give up Castle as, you know, as a decent backup to,
mm-hmm,
to you know, Dallas, I'm assuming maybe Matt Castle decided to go there given the fact that there's, it's a big opportunity.
Well, it's a huge opportunity. It's a matter of whether or not he can get it from Whedon, who actually outplayed most of the skeptics, including myself, because, you know, I this isn't personal. It's just Whedon, like Fitzpatrick, you know, is just known for the fumbles and the INTs. And I have to say, he really did better than I expected him to. And in fact, that game yesterday was lost solely on our defense. And remember what I said last week? I said, if we lose, it's because of Julio Jones. I said, if we don't contain Julio Jones, I said, he's going to give us fits. I said,
Yeah, I mean, he didn't play bad, to your point. I think he completed, like, I think he completed 16 passes. You know, I mean, he's done well, but I don't know what happened there. They just Julio Jones had just a big game yesterday.
Oh yeah, and that's who I said was going to be the killer. I said if we didn't contain and control Julio Jones, we were going to be in a world of hurt. Because, and as much as I'm not a big Eli Manning fan, Eli, Peyton, Brady and Matt Ryan have this calm factor Whereas other quarterbacks like Jay Cutler especially are known for the freak out. You know, and they start going in panic and they get all upset and agitated. And, you know, those quarterbacks, oh, and Aaron Rodgers, they might be down, but they have this calm factor where they honestly believe that they will always come back. And he made sure that he got that team back. But Freeman was the one who just took it to the house. My God, 3 touchdowns yesterday? That was crazy.
Yeah, and Dallas was up, I think, 28 at one point in the first, 28-7 or something like that, or 21-7. So, you know, they gave it up. They gave the game up. They either defensively mm-hmm. they didn't hold very well, and then, you know, they got big, you know, they got let with big plays. And when you got a, you know, a speedy person like, you know, Julio Jones on the corners and
yeah.
to get on the edges, and then that's really what the difference was. They just opened, they left gaps open, and then Matt Ryan just took advantage of some of the openings, and then defensively they just couldn't hold down.
Well, and we didn't put any points on the board in the second half, and that's ridiculous. You know, that's what hurt us. You know, we put up 28 points in the first half when we were up and I'm just like, what in the world? You know? And
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like a collapse. It because they were playing very well to the beginning, and then all of a sudden it changes, you know, in the third. You know, Atlanta just keeps storming back, and it just seemed like they just couldn't hold. And then, you know, the end result is obviously they lose, you know, just giving them up. Basically, they gave up the game in some format. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because Atlanta looked so well for the quarters that were there. And it just seems to me like Dallas just couldn't hold. I mean, they were not making coverages. They were leaving gaps open. It was a quick strike that Matt Ryan was doing with Julio Jones. So when you're doing first downs like that and you're getting the opportunity to run the ball as well as throw and short passing, you're just going to get blown out.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And Devontae Freeman had 141 yards. So, I mean, there was no reason that our defense gave up that much on the pass run. I'm like, there is no – the run game – or our obviously the Falcons' run game was amazing, but our pass rushing was just stinky. I mean, we did nothing to stop their run game, and we couldn't. And, you know, and it's surprising because as bad as Atlanta was last year, can you believe that they're off to a 3-0 start?
Yeah, it's a 3-0 start, but the division's theirs to win, I think, because I don't know Carolina's for real. Tampa still, you know, we got question marks there as well. So, you know, they have a chance to win the division, and at this point, if they go up 4-0 next week or 5-0 the following week, we'd have to consider them legit at this point, because obviously there's, you know, halfway through 5 games. And if they're undefeated at this point, they're going to own that division.
Yeah, I can see that because I can definitely see the Falcons totally running away with this division. But I'm not going to count Cam out yet either, because even though it was a Drew Brees-less New Orleans Saints that they played, you know, the Saints still held their own, and it was, you know, they only lost by 5 points. So I'm not totally.
I think the real story you have to look at Atlanta right now is Dan Quinn's doing a good job so far in keeping him in the games, and this is a credit to him yesterday because they were down, like I said, 28-7, and all of a sudden, you know, his team responds and they come back and beat the Cowboys. So it's like that's you got to give credit to the coaching staff as well for, you know, staying with the game plan even though they were getting beaten down early.
Well, and I think the other part of it, too, was, you know, Whedon's INT in the second quarter. And I think, you know, because you said that there was a game-changing moment. And if anything, that was that game-changer that allowed the Falcons to get back in it. Because, and I heard something on the radio earlier today about Whedon being sensitive or something like that. And, you know, and I understand that quarterbacks have fragile egos. I really do. But at some point, you're going to have to just toughen up, Cookie. And, you know, and you got to be able to cut it loose. That's one of the things they say about Andrew Luck. You know, it doesn't matter how many interceptions he throws, he's going to come right back out there like he didn't just throw that, because he shakes it off. And if that's the case, Whedon's going to have to learn how to shake stuff off.
Yeah, and that's where we're at right now. I think Carolina, if you look at the division right now, Carolina and Atlanta will be fighting for the South, I think, in the NFC South right now, given how well they're doing. At this point, I'm more surprised that the Raiders rebounded. And even then, they almost let the Browns come back. I mean, they only beat them by 7 points, but Oakland seems to be on a roll. So I guess I got to eat my crow, because I said that they weren't going to be pretty much a little bit of nothing this year. And all of a sudden, Derek Carr throws, what, 2 touchdowns yesterday? And then you had, I think, with Murray running for 139 yards, which they ended up snapping an 11-game road losing streak against the Browns. So I guess I have to eat my words, I guess, because I think he went 0-8 on the road. I'm talking to Carr in last year. But yesterday, I think he was 20 of 32 for 134 yards. So that's a good sign for them that they're actually making some progress.
Yeah, I'm excited for them. And that was one of the games that I was looking forward to seeing on Sunday, was because I really wanted to see what they were going to do. And I was excited at first because I thought that Cleveland was going to leave Manziel in and let him start. And that would have been awesome, Carr against Manziel. I would have loved to have seen that game. I think it would have been a really high, energetic game. But to turn around and, you know, put McCown back in, I'm like, I think this totally deflated that team and their energy. I mean,
yeah, and I think it's too early for them. I think they're making a mistake. To your point, I think they're making a mistake with McCown, starting McCown. I mean, when you had some momentum and some buzz going with Manziel.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But now, but again, with that, look at the parity. I mean, it was still only a 7-point win. I mean, it's 27-20. So, and as much as there was some excitement and some life finally out there in the Bay, the Browns didn't do too poorly either in terms of, you know, holding their own. And
yeah, no, I'm not saying they're playing bad ball
so
right
far.
Now. Don't get me wrong. I just don't think – I'm not saying Cleveland's horrible or anything like that. I'm just saying that they may be the difference for them to get over the hump and get some more wins would have been Manziel in there, because they were being comfortable and they were playing pretty open ball. And when we saw the week when he started, it was pretty exciting. They were airing it out. They were throwing for under 20 and making first downs. Yeah. They were moving the ball up and down the field. So I don't know, maybe this is a mistake, but I guess we'll see next week and the weeks to come if that's going to be a factor. But I'm pretty sure Cleveland fans right now probably would rather have had Manziel yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Well, because they need some life. They need something to look forward to in the dog pound. They need a reason to cheer, and right now they're just not getting it. But in speaking of reason to cheer, have you noticed, like, looking at these scores, that the NFL right now is all about extremes or parity? The game so far seem to be either massive blowouts or they're just one-score games in terms of how close these teams are, which could be truly any given Sunday. And
yeah,
just
yesterday in some games, it kind of looked like the women's games. You know, when we talk about how during the U.S. season, we were talking about how, you know, there was teams going 60-0, 60-7, 47-12.
Yeah.
Yesterday there was a lot of games in that aspect of it. I mean, there was
I think, you know, you take Seattle 26-0, and then you had, you know, tonight on Monday night, you got 27-7, which, you know, we already knew Green Bay was going to be well, and it was they're going to do well. So tonight alone, and then you get Arizona completely on a skyrocket mode yesterday with against the Niners, 47-7. So I was on Twitter yesterday for most of the day, and I can tell you right now, on my timeline, there was a lot of people frustrated with all the bad calls by the refs, the decision makings,
yes,
and all the reviews that just delayed the game.
Oh my gosh, the reviews were totally irritating me. I was actually at a sports bar, so seeing as how they're not sponsoring, we shall give no plugs. But we were, you know, but I was with a friend, and so she and I, you know, were watching the game together, and my God, it just seemed to drag everything out. Every single time I turned around, they were sending something back to New York. How does New York have time to manage all these games? Good Lord. I mean, are we really and truly, it was crazy.
I mean, just Detroit, Denver last night, I think people were pulling their hairs out at some point during the game because there was flags going on, and then we have to review this play, and then the refs make the wrong call, so now we have to overturn the call. I mean, it just became one of those things where it's like there was no real flow to the game, so it was just like a stop and go, stop and go, stop and go, and then you just felt like, okay, this is kind of horrible football, you know what I mean? When you hit that button all the time, it's kind of horrible football, and you get that, you know, you don't have that excitement anymore. You have more of a bummer status.
Absolutely. Well, now speaking of the calls, so what's your take on the whole Cam Newton Ed Hockley situation? This is very, very interesting.
I just think as a professional, you could have just not made the comment at the podium. You could have just addressed it internally with the ref. But since you did make the statement out and you put him on the hot seat, you kind of, in a way, gave a black eye to the refs. So you kind of just went out there and basically said, these guys don't give a hoot about us. He said this to me. I mean, I think it was kind of childish in that way. I think he could have just kept it reserved. He could have addressed it internally with the organization, could have taken it up to his coach, to the owner, and then have them address, you know, the referees association based on his conduct. But since he let it out, I think, you know, on both ends, I think it was the refs, you know, Hockley's, you know, statement, I think it's just kind of, you know, shouldn't have been made.
All right. And now, unfortunately, because nobody can tell anything, it's a bunch of he said, she said, but it was clear that there was communication between the two, and neither one of them looked happy. But I was listening, listening to another show, and I agree, it's less about whether or not he made the statement about, oh, well, you're too young to get the call. It does, however, speak to a bigger issue in the NFL in terms of who's getting the calls, because the whole point of roughing the passer is to protect the quarterback. And if quarterbacks are getting what they call in NBA, the Michael Jordan treatment, where if you look at Jordan, you call a foul on him, but Jordan can foul you all day long and nothing got called. If that is how they're refereeing the games in terms of giving deferential protection to, I don't even want to call them the franchise quarterbacks, because at this point they're beyond franchise. They are the face of the league, you know.
Yeah, but it's like, I'm going to tell you right now, in honest truth, it happens at every level of football. It happens in high school. It happens through the ranks. All I'm saying is there's preferential treatment to certain star status players, and then there is none to the others. So either that or Cam Newton isn't at a very high status level yet as a Tom Brady. So he's not going to, you know, get the call overlooked. And that's really what I think that's what the statement was. I mean, that's how he took it, which is, okay, you're not even close to being an elite quarterback. So, you know, hush up,
you're not going to get a call from me. That's really what that, you know, if, based on what Cam said of the statement, that's really what the referee told him. Basically, you're not even close
and
to being
the
an only quarterback goal.
But here's
which
the
is,
problem.
Which is not a good thing.
No, because he's the franchise quarterback. And look at how we already see how much the franchise quarterback impacts the team. So it doesn't matter what the ref thinks about who he is as a quarterback or his value to the team. You know, it's not that the ref's call to determine, you know, the quarterback's value.
I think Marshall Faulk said it best. It's the rule, and technically, if you know the refs are going to stand by the rule, as you exit the pocket, you are prone to get hit. It just that's how
right.
the rule is written. So technically, he exited the pocket, he ran out of the pocket, and he ended up getting striked. And you know that's basically what the ref was telling him: "Hey, you're just not going to get a call from me. So just you know ease up." And that's really what happened.
Yeah.
So I think he took more offense to the fact that, you know, he took it more like the ref didn't even care. And, I mean,
right.
I think that's what he was more bugged at, the fact that he didn't even get a, you know, proper statement saying, hey, you're out of the pocket. You're not going to get that call. I don't care who you are.
Right.
But technically, that's not how it came out. It came out more like, hey, you're not even an elite quarterback, so don't even think of me making that call for you. It's like, what?
Right.
Yeah. So he was kind of blown away, I think, in that sense.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Did you get a chance to watch the Tennessee Colts game? Andrew Luck finally
pulled
it off.
No, I did not.
That was
yeah, I know
a
I didn't
crazy
get a chance
ending.
Was it that one? Where,
crazy.
I think it was 35-33, I think, at the end.
Yes.
I think it was 35-33, and they had put up, I think 21 points in the fourth quarter. If I read
yep.
right, they came. Yeah,
you read it
wow.
exactly right. And I'm sitting there watching this game, and I'm saying, "What in the world is this?" And I couldn't figure out how in the world Tennessee lost that game. And, you know, because Mariota took them down for the TD. And, you know, they got stopped on the two-point conversion. And then the onside kick went out of bounds. Because I was just totally blown away at how crazy that
yeah,
score was.
Yeah, but you got to give credit where credit is due. I mean, there's issues there now, you know, I think, in Indianapolis more so than anything right now with the coaching
and
everything else. But, I mean, he did a good job, I think, from what I saw on the highlights, they did a pretty good job in terms of rallying back. So, you know, it was another Luck fourth quarter kind of like a miracle for him. And he's done very well. I think the Titans have lost, like, I think 13 out of 14 against their you know, opponents in the AFC South. So they haven't done very well. But, I mean, with Mariota at the helm, you would have thought it would have been different, but it did not. So, another Luck game, as they say, another stunning comeback, and the Colts get lucky.
Yeah, it was it was also the win that Luck needed to help try to revive that Colts and turn them around, especially you're talking about a team that went to the AFC Championship last year, and now they were in danger of going 0-3 to start the season.
Right. And we talked about that, how crucial that would have been for them had they done that. But I think right now they're having a lot more issues internally, not so much on the field. That they're still being competitive on the field. But this, you know, the rumor that the coach is going to return in 2016, whether it'll be the same regime or not, you know, it could be something that's weighing on every player's head, especially on the quarterback, you know, doubt. It's not as comforting when you know that person's going to be there for the remainder of the season and maybe beyond. So sometimes that's disturbing, and that could be affecting some of the play on the field as well for some of the players.
But, and I'm going to ask a question, because when Pagano went out sick and Arian came in, I mean, they were all in for Pagano, you know. Excuse me. So I'm trying to think, is it that Pagano has lost the team, or is it his relationship with the front office that he's lost?
I'm with you with the front office. I really am. I think that the players will do their job going forward. They might not do it as well as they could have with stability. But, yeah, I think your assessment is probably on point.
Then if that's the case, then are the players then more worried about the stability of who's leading the helm for this team, or are they just going to take the mentality of, regardless of who's going to be the coach, we're just going to come in and do our job and do the best that we can do, and you all fight this out on your end?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I was a player, I'd probably take that mentality, because I'm going to be here longer, especially if my contract is going to be, you know, extended for another year. It's just a matter of figuring out that I'm just going to have to play out the best I can for the rest of the season.
And that's what I think, you know, and that's my takeaway so far, is that the Colts are just going to have to come together and literally carry themselves. You know.
Yeah, they're going to have to do. They're going to have to make adjustments, and they're going to have to do that. Let's talk about Arizona and the big win. I mean, they are just almost as good as the Patriots right now. They're playing high level football. They literally just, you know, they just blew out San Francisco. I think that was a statement game for them in the NFC West. I mean, they just basically said, hey, we're the big dogs here. You're going to have to go through us if you're if you're going to win this division. I think that was a big statement game yesterday.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that they also wanted to let everybody know, you know, that this was supposed to be our division last year, you know, and then Palmer went out. And even with that, I mean, you have to think about it. They did really well considering the fact that they really didn't have a strong quarterback, you know, and Logan, who came in when Palmer went out. You know, Logan was out of UVA. No, Tech. Logan was out of Virginia Tech. And Logan, you know, even at Tech, wasn't a bad quarterback, but he just wasn't considered to be a great quarterback, and I think that he still has some growing pains as well. But yeah, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you that the Cardinals are out to make a statement, and they're coming on strong, especially in the wake of all of the Seahawks' struggles to find their offensive rhythm, and then of course all the other issues with Cam and the holdout. So I think that they're trying to take advantage of the dysfunction between the 49ers and Seattle.
Yeah, and right now, if you look at the game yesterday, they just steamrolled over them. I mean, the Arizona returned two of Kaepernick's first four passes for touchdowns. They romped, you know, basically on them. I think Fitzgerald had like nine catches yesterday for over 130 yards and a couple of touchdowns. And then Chris Johnson, on top of that, kind of
oh
the resurgent
God.
Chris Johnson, 110 yards
yes.
and two scores for him. So how lucky can you be? You get transferred to Bruce Arians' already, you know, stout, talented team, and you basically are undefeated. I mean, he's got to be on, like, total high right now.
Man, talk about a career revival. My goodness gracious. I mean, he was with Tennessee. I mean, he was just, you know, the running back of the year. I mean, he was just the man. And then he held out, and then after he held out to get more money, then he had the injury, and nothing was ever the same for him. Then he went to the Jets and, you know, thought he was going to – and nothing was happening there. And, man, I had to look at the screen twice. I was like, Chris Johnson? That Chris Johnson? I was totally
blown
away.
That Chris Johnson is still a factor, and under the right system, which Arians – does have a very decent system for running backs. I think he's going to do very well. And then yesterday, Kaepernick, I mean, he looked so much like a rookie yesterday. It's like four interceptions.
Yeah.
And then Tyrone Mathieu looked like Deion Sanders yesterday on every pick. It was just a horrible outing for Kaepernick in San Francisco, and they just somehow, you know, they gave up points and they lost badly because of the points that they gave up.
Well, you know what, though? I'm glad you mentioned Tyrann Mathieu because I forgot about the Honey Badger. Can I just say I am so happy for that young man. I mean, what an awesome, awesome career he is having out there. You know, from all of his troubles at LSU to, you know, getting kicked off the team for a year and just totally turned his life around. And those are the feel-good stories that you want to see in the NFL. So kudos to that young man right there.
Yeah, and, you know, he's playing good ball, but you got to give credit to credit his due. Like I said, this Cardinals team has good leadership at the top. Arians is allowing his coaches to kind of, you know, streamline and do the things that need to be done against their opponent. And yesterday, I think San Francisco got exploited. And on top of Kaepernick donating turnovers and picks, they look very horrible. And everybody on the sidelines, you can see when you're watching the game against Arizona, I mean, all the Niners were just like, they couldn't believe that, you know, they were doing this bad.
Well, I actually think they can believe that they were doing this bad. And what's so interesting is that, and I know that it's technically, you know, not what we generally talk about, you know, the two of us, especially since Erica's not here, but I heard on the news today, listening to sports talk around here, was that Michigan's defense under Harbaugh is supposed to be number two, you know, in the NCAA. So not only are we seeing a situation where there was all this turmoil and upset with the front office and with Harbaugh, but now that he's gone, look at just how badly this team is doing. So is it, you know, maybe for all of the theatrics and all of the dramatics and all of the other issues, it might be clear that he was very critical to the success of that 49ers franchise.
Yeah, and you know that they've had issues ever since the coaching change. You had players either retiring or players asking to go. And then I think this week I read on Twitter that Sharice Wright was seeking a trade or a release. So there's got to be something going wrong internally in the organization when players are wanting to completely retire or leave the organization or are seeking trades or asking for a release. So, I mean, that doesn't bode well for Coach Tomasula when some of the players are publicly saying, I want out of San Francisco.
Yeah. I mean, because I did not see Patrick Willis. That one totally threw me. And then you had the situation with the player who keeps getting in trouble. And darn it, every time I want to say his name, it goes right out my head. You know, but he's already been in several league issues for substance abuse. And then I think, I mean, so, yeah, that they're putting the D in dysfunction right now.
And it's not going to look good for them in the West because if Seattle gets rolling, and it's only time before Seattle gets rolling, the Rams are still, you know, they're not great, but, you know, they're still something of a set for them to get a couple wins within the division. So, you know, and the conference is still a tough conference. So if they don't get it together soon, they could technically go 2-2 next week, or they can fall to 1-3. If they fall to 1-3, then there's going to be a lot of more question marks about. So let's move on to Thursday before we go do the women's rundown. So it's going to be Pittsburgh,
okay,
Baltimore on Thursday. So it's a big division rival. You know, it's a division game. So the Steelers with Michael Vick starting. So what's your thoughts there?
You know what? I honestly am pulling for Vic. Now, that said, because I'm down here, you know, in between D.C. and Baltimore, I have to give kudos to Steve Smith Sr. The old guys are straight balling. I mean, this is going to be a good game. It's a division rival. It's a heated rivalry, and both teams are going to bring their A game. So even though Big Ben is out, I am not counting out the Steelers just yet, because Michael Vick, with his veteran, you know, years of experience, knows how important this game is and respects that rivalry between these two organizations. And trust and believe, he is going to do everything he can to rally the troops. The biggest thing Vic has to do is figure out how to slide, how to get down, and also to maybe figure out if they can keep the pocket open for him long enough for him to make plays so he doesn't have to make those types of plays with his legs that tend to get him injured.
Yeah, I think if he stays within the Ben Roethlisberger realm of things with the game plan, he's got a great arm. He's able to be mobile when needed. And if he utilizes, you know, his receiving cores as it is right now in the balanced running game that they've had, Ravens are prone in the secondary. So that could be a plus for them.
I think so, too. And also, and as much as Baltimore is 0-3, which is just absolutely shocking for a team that just won the Super Bowl 3 years ago. Was it? Gosh, has it been 3 years now?
Yes, it has.
But yeah, so for a team that just won the Super Bowl 3 years ago, for them to be 0-3 is ridiculous. But, again, it's that whole parity thing we were talking about earlier in the evening. Almost all of their losses have been one-score losses, so it's not like they've actually been out of the game. And
now they haven't played poorly, but they haven't played good enough to win, and that's really the difference. I mean, yesterday against Cincinnati, they only lost by 4. They rebound in the third and fourth quarter. They ended up putting, I think, 17 points in the fourth, which they got. I think they got, you know, they didn't get outscored very much in the first two quarters. I think they were down by a touchdown in each quarter. So reality is that they just couldn't muster enough plays to get a win. And like I said, I don't know about Cincinnati yesterday. They looked pretty good in terms of what they were doing, but you know, the Ravens, you know, despite putting up like, I think 300 something yards from Joe Flacco, and then Steve Smith with a couple of touchdowns, like I said, they're just losing by an edge. So it's not that they're a bad team. Unfortunately, they're just getting beat by a couple plays before the whistle ends, and that's why they're 0-3.
Yeah, and they're just going to have to shake it off. And like I said, I think that they've been playing, you know, and that's the other thing. It's not like they're lying down. It's not like they're not playing. You know, it just always seems to come down to one or two plays that seem to make the difference in the score.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened yesterday. So they're not horrible. They just got to find a way to make a couple more plays, and then you know, maybe some scores would help, and then they would probably be in the win column. So let's move on to Australia, the Women's Gridiron League in Australia, which couples with the NFL in the U.S. And so we had a couple games. One game on the slate in the Gridiron New South Wales, which is week 3, and it was the Raiders, the New South Wales Raiders, taking on UTS, and it was a 6-2 victory for the Raiders. I want to give out a shout out to Stacey Spear, who is the quarterback for the Raiders, and who ended up passing on a No Joke Football Shoot. They were taking a No Joke Football Shoots, and we're going to go ahead and display those this week on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. So Stacey, if you're listening, and everybody else on the Gridiron Raider squad, ladies, thank you very much for supporting our project and being part of the social media marketing campaign that we got going on. So check it out on Instagram. You can see Stacey Spear, the quarterback for the New South Wales Raiders. Gridiron New South Wales. Their next matches are October 10th, which is week 4. And there's two games on the slate, the Phoenix taking on the Raiders and the UTS versus Newcastle Cobras. So that'll be on October 10th. So they take a little breather. They also have a super raffle going on at Gridiron New South Wales. The super raffle is to see Jarrett Hayne live in San Francisco against my Rams on January 3rd. So the winner of the raffle gets all expense paid tickets to see the matchup in San Francisco. So what do you think of that? Pretty cool, huh?
Awesome. I think it's totally awesome. And, you know, again, every opportunity that we have to continue to create the exposure is really going to make the difference.
Yeah, and Stacey's a really good quarterback. You'll see her on some highlights. If you go to at Women's Gridiron as well as WLAUS.com, you can follow the page. Women's Gridiron League of Australia is on Facebook, and you can pretty much get some highlights and game highlights. And if you go to YouTube, you can also go to YouTube and you can pull up, search UNSW Raiders, and they'll have highlights of some of the games that are intact for the men's squads as well as the women's squads, which get supported by the men's squads. So let's move on to week 6 in the Gridiron Queensland League. You can follow at Women's Gridiron on Twitter as well, and you get the recap there. And then our new network partners is Gridiron Down Under at Gridiron Down Under on Twitter, and they'll have the recaps of the games, and you can follow them on our Twitter timeline, and you can get the recaps of all the leagues there as well. So Gold Coast Stingrays put up 26 points to zero versus the Kenmore Panthers. The Stingrays coming off last week on a tie against the Ravens. So at this point, Bayside rebounds as well, and they get to beat the champs. Bayside, after a tough battle and a tie against Stingrays last week, they turn around and they get to face the champs, the Logan City Jets, with their No Joke Football supporter, Christy L. Moran. And somehow they squeeze by and they get a 32-30 win. So congratulations to the Bayside Ravens girls for upsetting the champs in a regular season slate, week 6. And the next games are going to be on October 3rd. It's going to be the Stingrays taking on the Jets, which is a rematch pretty much of every year that the league's been in existence. It's a hot battle. We're talking Chicago Bears against Green Bay Packer type game. So it's Gold Coast Stingrays against the Jets, and that's going to be pretty awesome game. So we'll look forward to that. Wildcats rebound after a week last week on a forfeit, and they will face the Panthers as well. Kenmore looking for a win. Wildcats looking for a rebound win. At this, Panthers are 1-3. The Wildcats are 0-4. So it's kind of like, this is kind of a matchup, Nkechi, of who wants it more, just to get a standings win.
Well, this sounds exciting. And, you know, these ladies, again, they play some serious football. My goodness. And I'm really loving learning about the different rivalries. So, you know, I just wish, and I'm glad you said the thing about the YouTube, because, you know, being able to watch and being able to connect with them and being able to see them in action really makes the difference.
Yeah, and this, the Queensland League is kind of an elite league with Gridiron Victoria, not to take away anything from New South Wales, but Queensland's pretty elite team, and that's where we have our two No Joke Football supporters, Lauren Evans, who, you know, from the Gold Coast Stingrays, and obviously Christy L. Moran's from the Jets.
Christy.
So the other teams are going to be in, it's going to be Spartans taking on the Ravens. The Ravens right now are 3-0-1. So if you look at the standings, the Stingrays are 3-0-1 based on the tie with the Ravens. The Jets are 3-1. So you're looking at Gold Coast putting up, I think, 154 points to 14 against their opponents. So this
Ooh.
Team is obviously knows how to score based on the stat sheet here. And then the Ravens are no slouch either, because they've put up 99 points to a 50 against their opponent, and then 142 for the Jets. So those are the top three squads in the league. So it's going to get exciting as we go towards the next week, which is week 7 on October 3rd.
I know. I wish we could get a chance to interview some of these ladies, because I would love the opportunity to just, you know, to talk with them and, you know, and find out what drives them, what motivates them, you know, where are they finding the passion to want to play American football.
Yeah, we're going to do a Facebook, on Facebook, coming up here in about a month or so. We're going to do a chat on Facebook, on our Facebook page, so that we can talk about the leagues, three leagues there, and kind of interview a couple of their players on Facebook and then have fans interact with them. So we're working on that right now. Hopefully for November 1st, as the playoffs come into play, they'll give us better insights in terms of, you know, as crunch time comes into play for Queensland, the Queensland League, it would be a better, you know, aspect of that to get to know them better. But at this point, based on the standings, you've got Gold Coast Stingrays 3-0-1, Ravens 3-0-1, the Bayside Ravens. Surprise team. It's a new team this season. So congratulations to the girls there for just kicking butt. They're 3-0-1, and they're being competitive with the two top teams, the veteran teams, basically the franchise teams in the league. So the Jets 3-1 as well. So move on to Gridiron Victoria at this point. And you can follow them at Gridiron Vic on Twitter, Gridiron Victoria on Facebook, and you can also use the hashtag GVWomens. So Gridiron Victoria Women's is the hashtag. You can follow them on Twitter. Congratulations to the NR Raiders, which is the Raiders, the Northern Lady Raiders. We'll give a shout out to Nicole Webster and to Paige Farrell, and you have them on our Twitter page as well. Paige alone had 4 touchdowns in the victory this coming week, which they did 60-0, beating the Geelong Buccaneers. So this girl was on fire, and she 4 TDs. Mrs. Webster there had a bunch of tackles. She was like a beast on the field, just tearing up.
Oh, yeah. Rhonda Rossi, watch out.
I think that's a good compliment for Nicole, because from what I hear, she's a very aggressive player and on the hunt. So kind of like a Mr. Hunt, kind of like a Ray Lewis type. So she's if you see her on the picture, you can tell that this girl's got game. So shout out to Nicole Webster and obviously to Paige Farrell for the 4 touchdowns to complete the 60-0 victory against the Geelong Bucks. The Melbourne Chargers lose to the Croydon Rangers, and Bliss Love, shout out to her. She's awesome. Ever since we followed her last year, she was on our profile page. We really appreciate her giving us the opportunity to showcase her as well. You can catch their games as well, Gridiron Victoria. You can go to YouTube as well, look up Gridiron Victoria, and you can look up their games there, and they're basically streamed also. So 24-18, Croydon Rangers. So they're on a roll right now. They're pretty much top dogs. So the Raiders 3-0, they're putting up 126 points. The Croydon Raiders are 3-0, and they're putting about 68 points. And then Geelong Bucks follow that with 2-1. Then you got the Berwick Miners 1-2, and then you got the Ballarat Kesserals. So the Chargers lose to the Croydon Rangers 24-18, and then the Miners take care of the Kesslers 46-6. So that's the action on there. Once again, if you want to follow all the action, you can go to YouTube as well and look up the individual league links, and you can see the highlights there for all the games, including the women's game and the men's recaps, including juniors as well. There's usually juniors games as well. So you can go to YouTube. You can follow Ag Women's Gridiron on Twitter. You can follow the Women's Gridiron Leagues of Australia on Facebook, so you can keep tabs on all that. And also the individual, like I said, links, which is Gridiron Queensland on Facebook, Gridiron New South Wales, NSW on Facebook, and the Gridiron Victoria on Facebook. So thank you very much, everybody, who sent us the information, networking, to gather it together. And if you have any links to your games, and Kishi and myself would appreciate it, just go ahead and tab it out at Kishi's Cuties, or you can do at Gridiron Beauty, and then we'd be more than happy to retweet that for you and get the buzz going for your league. So Victoria, Gridiron New South Wales, Gridiron Queensland, and Gridiron Victoria should be back on the mix next week. So we'll follow that and the other two leagues, October 3rd as well as October 10th. So thank you very much for that. So a pretty exciting season down under for the three leagues in the women's kit, full kits. Are you there, Kishi?
Nope, I'm still here. I was actually,
all right.
Because I was going to tell you when you finished, I was going to say that Fuse has done an amazing job of hyping up the new reality show pretty strong.
Yeah, and Oxygen, like we talked about earlier, since we're on the same page, the Ladies Gridiron League of Australia will kick off also next month in October, and you can follow the details on our Facebook page as well. But Ladies Gridiron, similar to the Legends Football League, and so we're kind of excited. It's a Brisbane Blaze taking on the Adelaide Phoenix, and you can get tickets at ladiesgridiron.com. But yeah, to your point, it's right now in the Legends Football League, it's kind of a stage or a transition or a period where they're going to be front and center, not only on Fuse, but now starting October 6th, you're going to have the Chicago Blitz, which is Heather Furr, Joshie Rice, you got Dina Fagiano, and you have Chantel Taylor, Jamie Barwick, Allie Alberts. So it's going to be about 8 girls that they're following on the team from the reality show. So we're going to get to see exactly what they go through in a season, obviously on Oxygen, and that's pretty strong. You can go to the link on Twitter, and you can hit the hashtag pretty strong. To your point, Nkeshi, before you said, hey, this is kind of an Oprah thing, so hopefully this will pan out for them, and then we get to see what they go through.
Well, let me tell you one thing. That was all that I heard this weekend was my daughter walking around the house. Are we pretty? Yes. Am we strong? Yes. Pretty strong. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's all I heard all weekend. But at the same time, it's a good thing because, again, what we've been talking about ever since, we came on, and, can you believe it's almost been a whole year because I started doing the show with you guys last October, is how much, these little, like our show, creating the awareness, creating the opportunity to profile and highlight and to give fans an opportunity to get close and get personal and get to know these amazing women. And now, with this added benefit of having, pretty strong, is going to allow us to really get to know them in a way that I think will help change people's minds about the validity of what these women do and their toughness as well as their athleticism.
Yeah, and we'll get an inside look. I mean, they're very talented athletes. But you're going to see the other side of it. You're going to see the talent that they have off the field as women in everyday environments, which is in their work environments, as well as, how they have to balance the time and balance the situation with, scheduling to make the time for training, to make the time for family time if needed. I know Jamie has a child, so that's a lot more difficult than somebody that's just single and doesn't have anything else but job and work. So it's going to be one of those situations where we'll get to see that firsthand, front and center visually, before we hear everything. Now we're going to see it front and center. So, congratulations to the Chicago Blitz and for them. And obviously congratulations to the Legends Football League for, having Oxygen take a chance on them, and we'll see how it pans out in terms of ratings, and hopefully that they're good ratings. It keeps them alive. And that's a good step, like you said, with PR. It's a good stepping stone for next season when they kick off the 2016 season. So the other thing I wanted to mention is in Texas, the Austin Acoustic is the new LFL team there. And I want to say shout out to all the Sugar and Spice Football League and the Ultimate Women's Football League girls in those two leagues that are competing for a roster spot on that new team. And obviously it's high profile because the Legends Football League is on Fuse and it's on Oxygen. So it's a huge opportunity for those players to get on that team and maybe end up showcasing themselves as elite athletes on a television viewership level.
Oh, yes. It's definitely going to make the difference. And I really think that, like the Divas show, about the women of the WWE, I think that this is just really going to elevate the game of women's professional football.
Yeah, and you have both sides, and we talked about it before, how the women's full kit leagues don't really approve of some of the things that the Legends Football League does. But at this point, you got to give them at least an applaud for even getting on television and getting a regular delayed game on, and then on top of that, getting a reality series show. on a major network. Oxygen's major. I mean, you can't get any better
Absolutely.
Than that. So
no.
So congratulations to Mitchell Mortaza, the Legends Football League staff, as well as the athletes that are playing in the Legends Football League. So we'll see what it turns out at this point, if it's something that's going to work out for them. And then ultimately they're looking for revenue, because if you get, just like the NFL has so many sponsors because of their branding, this league is looking for obviously a sponsorship, hold, so that they can actually get some revenue to start doing what like the WNBA does, their players, and other major women's sports leagues, when they have to pay the player. So at this point, this is kind of a stepping stone towards the athletes getting paid at some point based on all this exposure.
And that's what I think is going to make the difference, because, whether it's full kit or not, it's the opportunity to, have awareness. But once they start getting this elevated awareness, one of the things that they're going to have to do is they're going to have to do what the NFL did, and they're just going to have to figure out how to get together under one unified umbrella league. Because, having the AFL and the NFL eventually became, unrealistic and unstable to manage and maintain. And I think that is where the ladies are just going to have to figure out how to come together and to create some unity. Because once the NFL all came under one umbrella, and you had the AFC and the NFC, then, maybe these other leagues for the women can do the same, and divide themselves up by, divisions. But the full kits are going to have to come at some point under one umbrella, and then have unified standards.
Yeah, we've talked about in the past where, the right thing to do would be to have, like, the WFA and the IWFL, and we talked to various players before, is where they could have a situation where
mm-hmm.
they take the very top five teams in each league. We're talking, the Pittsburgh Passion,
mm-hmm.
the Chicago Force, the former Boston Militia at this point,
yep.
The New York Sharks, the DC Divas. Take those squads, and you would have to put them somehow. You'd have to get some sort of sponsorship and put the very elite teams with some stable organizations and put them in a formatted league, just like the LFL does, which is six markets.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to play, X amount of games, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, however you want to play. But that's an effort on both leagues where they have to come up with some funding. So either the rest of the owners that put in a certain amount of dollars, so it's like $5,000 per team or something like that, or more. So you would have to sacrifice those dollars towards the betterment of the game by only showcasing, six, seven, or eight, or 10 top teams in the nation to cover cost and travel and everything else, just to put yourself on the map on some sort of exposure, like on a CBS Sports or some sort of other sports network, like you talked about before, in order for you to get noticed. So until they do that, this is not going to happen. But you got to applaud the Legends Football League for at least making the effort. And I know, most people will mock it and say, well, that's not full kit. They're, they're just running around in skinny bikini, whatever, and that's why they're getting on TV. Well, I guess they're just a better marketing. They've just thought of it at a better marketing angle. And so you can't blame them for somebody saying, yes, we'll take you on and we'll go ahead and put your product on. They've done just a better job at doing the marketing. And that's really what it boils down with television. If you can do good marketing and you get viewership to accept it, you're going to be in the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's exactly, what it is. It has to do with the marketing. But I also think it has to do with the fact that, like you said, they're not splintered. The LFL is not splintered into LFL-A and semi-dressed League B and, with three teams here and four teams under this league and six teams under there. They're all under one umbrella. And it makes a difference because it's easier to follow. I know who the teams are. I know it's easier to follow the teams and the schedules as opposed to two different leagues and trying to keep up with everybody.
Yeah, and for you know, for it, we've talked about it before, you know that when it comes down to one umbrella, it's a lot more stronger leadership and negotiation
mm-hmm.
for bargaining.
Yes, and that is what's going to be critical. If these ladies really want the opportunity to play professional football and to be paid as professional athletes, it's going to require unity and the ability to collectively bargain. And if you can't bargain for your benefits, if you can't bargain for, you know, what are going to be your salaries as well as your caps, because you have to protect the teams too. What are going to be your caps? And with that, you have to, then you'll have the ability to go before sponsors and say, you know, here's our sponsorship packet. We are this, and we know we are going to have this many games, and we have this many teams, and you know, this is where we want you to be, and we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this. Because in as much as you don't really see that many arena games, they're still playing. So they must be doing something right to draw the crowd as well as to secure the sponsorships. And that is what the ladies are going to have to figure out.
Yeah, and
having
that's
a unified,
basically
consistent
been...
product is going to make the difference.
Yeah, and that's been the issue at this point. So, you know, we've had individual players on the show that expressed that also as well, that it has to be a unified front, you know, especially in the U.S., where the game is born. They have to make it happen here in this country, in the U.S., because if they can make it happen in Australia where they're streaming games live with three different
yeah.
leagues, I mean, it's not impossible to do it here. It might even be on delay, just like the LFL does on delay programming. The two leagues in the U.S. need to merge, and then they need to come up with, okay, an elite matchup, and then pick and choose which one's the better game to showcase on YouTube or however you want to put it, on Periscope or whatever, you know, link so far, so you can get interest, and then maybe at that point, one of the major networks will take a look at it after, you know, gaining so much viewership on those streaming motions, and then give you an opportunity, just like Oxygen and Fuse gave the Legends Football League.
And I think that that's what's going to make the difference in the
yeah.
ability to draw viewers.
Yeah, and that's the key right
and
there, attendance as well.
Mm-hmm. But you have to, because the quality of the football isn't the issue. There's no doubt about the quality of the sport and what they're putting out there. But it's very difficult to see when you don't know who's coming, and then you have games that are forfeited because, you know, for whatever reason, or teams have to fold because they don't have enough players, and it will help just eliminate a lot of that.
Yeah, it would, and so that's where we're at right now. But, you know, just getting back to, you know, the positive, which is the LFL, the Legends Football League, premieres pretty strong on October 6th. It's going to feature the former champs, the Chicago Bliss, with the talented Allie Alberts, Taylor, Dina Fagiano, and Joshie Rice, Jamie Warwick. So that's going to be on October 6th. So make sure you look out. We're going to be talking about it, obviously, because we're going to be watching it as well. So I think it's pretty much time to wrap up at this point. So if you go to the No Joke Football site at Zazzle.com, you can get pretty much anything customized and name branding, from tank tops to hoodies to shirts to gifts. It's a women's gridiron. So you go to Zazzle.com/gridironbeauties. And you can get the No Joke Football branding there. So just go on there. And we're also on ultimatesportstalk.com. You can find us here on Blog Talk Radio. You can get a hold of Kishi at Kishi's Cuties, and you can talk basketball, sports, football, pretty much anything that's on your mind. And she's pretty much dived into as well. You can always follow us at Gridiron Beauty. And we're talking women's gridiron 24/7 as well as NFL. And, you know, we got awesome followers as well on our timeline. So, Kishi, anything else before we bail out of here?
No, just to say that the Chiefs are trying to put up a little bit of a fight here, and they just got another touchdown. I can't see what the score is right now because, oh, there it is. It's 22-38, 9 minutes left to go in the game, and the Chiefs are trying to move, and they are still fighting. So there's still time in this game for them to come back. I don't think they're going to win, but I think that this is definitely not going to be the blowout that it was looking like at halftime. So that's always good for Monday Night Football. Blowouts
are
never
competitive
good.
Competitive football is what we want. We certainly don't want what we had yesterday with Denver and Detroit. And hopefully there's no bad calls today because I haven't even checked yet. But we'll see how that works out. So for Nkechi Free, Oscar Lopez, just make sure you guys follow our podcast on ultimatesportstalk.com. You can follow them for all the action on WWE, MMA, NFL, and every other major sports at www.ultimatesportstalk.com. You can follow us here on Blog Talk Radio, or you can follow our links at Nkechi's Cuties. We'll post the link for our Gridiron Blitz as well as on at Gridiron Beauty and on Facebook as well. So for Nkechi Free, and this is Oscar Lopez, we'll see you next week as we talk more NFL football and we'll talk more Women's Australia Down Under action and recap. Have a great night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.